Our fourth case for this morning is Baker Machinery and Fabrication versus Traditional Baking, Inc., number 08-1967. Mr. Schrader.
Thank you, Your Honors. Brian Schroeder from Nova Celtic Law Offices for the Plaintiff Appellant Bakery Machinery Incorporated. Also present here is Mr. C.J. Barnes, the President of Bakery Machinery. This case, Your Honors, presents the question of when are the sins of the attorney not to be visited upon the client?
Who picked the attorney?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
Who picked the attorney?
Bakery Machinery chose Mr. Hinterlong as its attorney, Your Honor.
Anybody contemplate a suit for malpractice?
We on behalf of Bakery Machinery, have filed for malpractice. That case is currently pending in Cook County.
It's hard for me to find that there's anything left.
Well, as the attachments to some of the filings in this case indicate, Mr. Hinterlong does not have liability insurance. He is essentially a dry well, as far as we can tell. That case has not progressed too far yet, Your Honor, so I can't say that with certainty. But that does sort of dovetail into our position that it is manifestly unjust here for Bakery Machinery to have to pay for Mr. Hinterlong's sins. Well, if Bakery Machinery chose Mr. Hinterlong as its attorney, they obviously chose him with the intention and expectation that he would be diligent in how he litigated this case. And as the record indicates, he didn't.
Any authority for that position at all, that we can correct what you describe as a manifest injustice?
Well, certainly, Your Honor. Rule 60B6, which says you can grant relief in extraordinary circumstances from a default judgment.
A lawyer who neglects his obligation is not in extraordinary circumstances. It happens all the time. That's why you have malpractice insurance.
Well, then, Your Honor, if that's the position, then if we're going to take a position that attorney misconduct, whatever it is, per se is attributed to the client, no exceptions. First of all, as we point out in our briefs, that exact pronouncement has not yet been made by this court. But if you're going to make that pronouncement, I submit that that is inconsistent with the general agency law, which does not hold that principals are always liable for the conduct of an agent. That's why we have
Close to all, though, huh?
Well, but that, if you say pretty close, that admits that there are circumstances in which there are exceptions.
And having an attorney who simply neglects what he's supposed to do that you hired is not one of the exceptions to the rule. Matter of fact, this is almost a classic.
Standing alone, perhaps, but we have more than just a very bad attorney who bungled the case. What we have also is an attorney who deceived Bakery Machinery, who lied to his own client.
That's a liability of the attorney. It's not the liability of the defendant in the case.
Yes, but it does not. The Robinson Court didn't say that, and
what
that's
you're
what
suggesting
we're here.
Is that if the plaintiff hires a bad lawyer, doesn't do what he's supposed to do, that's the problem of the defense.
I'm not saying it's a problem of the defense, Your Honor. I'm saying
that's how it comes down.
Well, yes, that's how it comes out, perhaps. Granted, the defendant here did nothing wrong. They didn't hire Mr. Hinterlong. They didn't ask him to screw up the case. But they're benefiting from his wrongful conduct. Put a different way, they didn't do anything
they get the advantage of the law, which says that you have to do what you're supposed to do, or the case gets dismissed, and that's what happened.
Again, generically, yes, Your Honor, but as the Robinson Court said, when you have the presence of three circumstances, at least the Robinson Court decided that relief under Rule 60B6 was proper.
For a lawyer that's continually gummed up?
If an attorney mismanages the case, deceives the client, and the client is diligent, the Robinson Court said that then you can have relief.
What diligence did your client show?
Mr. Barnes
kept asking the attorney how are things going and took his word for it.
Well, that's, respectfully, Your Honor, that's what all clients do with all attorneys. So the attorney-client relationship.
That's not due diligence. Someplace you got to start checking, you get suspicious. That's what due diligence.
Well, Mr. Barnes did more than just ask his attorney what was going on. He participated in settlement conferences, two or three of them, with the magistrate. He submitted to his own deposition. He participated in the deposition of one of the defendant's agents. So he did more than just call Mr. Hinterlong and say, what's happening, what's going on. He did as much as he could do short of walking into the courthouse here and saying, I want to look at the file. And I don't think the law should require a client to go that far to look over and second guess and micromanage what their attorney does. Their attorney-client relation is a fiduciary relationship, one of trust and confidence. You shouldn't have to hire an attorney and then expect the attorney is going to fall asleep at the switch. And again, that's what Robinson said would allow for relief to be granted under Rule 60b-6.
What you're asking us to do is to tell Judge Lefkoe that she abused her discretion dismissing.
Yes, we submit that Judge Lefkoe did abuse her discretion in denying the motion for relief from the default judgment.
But the problem is, I mean, you're relying heavily on this Robinson case, which, of course, doesn't come from this court. This court in 7108 West Grand Avenue, United States versus 7108 West Grand Avenue, took a pretty clear line that all conduct except excusable neglect is the client's problem, as among a variety of innocent people out there. The client is certainly innocent, but so is the defendant and so is the court. And I think you've got a problem with 7108 West Grand.
As our briefs point out, Your Honor, 7108 did not involve what we have here, which is not just attorney neglect, but deception of the client and a client who is trying to pay attention to the case. And
okay.
As Enrico and some of the other cases we submit point out, this court has not yet ruled on that and that circumstance. Whether you've, for example, I think 7108 said you had the clients who were in fact not diligent, and here we have a client who was. And also, I would just end for now by saying, the court was innocent, the defendant was innocent, as you just said, Baker Machinery was innocent. Well, if everyone's innocent, then let's just go to court and give what the justice system is supposed to give to litigants, a day in court so they can have the case tried on the merits and not decided on technicalities, and not decided because Baker Machinery should not suffer for Mr. Hinterlong's sins under the circumstances of this case. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chemers?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Robert Chemers from Pretzel and Stauffer for the defendant, Appellee. This is a remarkable appeal. This is an appeal where the standard is abuse of discretion, where panel after panel of this Court has said that Rule 60B relief is extraordinary and is granted only in exceptional circumstances. You have an attorney stand before this Court and argue that 60B6 relief should have been allowed. However, they did not ask for 60B6 relief in the district court. In fact, the district court said, I'm not going to consider anything raised improperly for the first time in a reply brief, where there was no argument on 60B6. What they did was they cited in full Rule 60B, then come here, write a brief, and say it was an abuse of discretion for the district court not to grant 60B6 relief, but they never asked for it. A district court, obviously, Your Honors, can't abuse discretion where it's not asked to rule. Moreover, Judge Bauer, you are the author of the decision in Enrico, which is what they rely on heavily in their reply. In Enrico, writing for the court, Judge Bauer said that you can bring a Rule 59E motion to alter or amend a judgment after a 60B motion is denied. So we have a situation where the plaintiff writes a brief and says, at page 12, the conduct of our attorney was indefensible. We agree that the district court properly denied 60B1 relief. Then they say they're entitled to 60B6 relief, but not the original lawyer, but the present lawyer doesn't bring the 59E motion after the district court denied the Rule 60 motion. That's what should have happened. This court, back in 1983, led by Judge Bauer in Enrico, said the Rule 59E motion is proper to alter or amend a 60B motion. And the denial of a 60B motion, and at that time, the facts and circumstances of 60B6 relief can be raised. It wasn't done here. The argument that was just presented to this panel by Mr. Schroeder has been waived. There is no degree, I would submit to this court, of conduct of lawyers' conduct any longer. Judge Easterbrook in the DiMucci case wrote that the determination of where on the line from mere negligence to intentional misconduct the attorney's handling of the litigation falls. You don't have to determine it. It's unnecessary because the answer doesn't make any difference. I would submit to the court that what they call affirmative deception is no different than what Judge Easterbrook, writing for the majority in DiMucci, said was intentional misconduct.
Nobody's here defending what Mr. Hinterlong did. I wish it were more unusual. I mean, he actually does stand out from the crowd to me in terms of the various bad lawyer stories I've seen over the years. He was awful, and he harmed his client terribly. Whether there was any underlying merit in your position or his position is all, you know, gone by the wayside, I suppose, is a relevant issue. But it's pretty easy to see both the degree of the misconduct and the deep prejudice to Baker Machinery from that conduct.
I don't disagree with what Your Honor said, but what I will add is this, is that in the Reinsurance Company of America case, Judge Bauer, again writing for the majority, said that a party must...
I'm a kind of prolific writer, apparently. I didn't realize.
Busy guy.
Who are you? I was writing for the court, you understand.
What Your Honor wrote then was a party must stay abreast of a suit involving its business, and, quote, unquote, that is not asking too much. Now, that was at a time before the Easterbrook ruling that it doesn't matter where on this line of mere negligence or intentional misconduct the lawyer's conduct falls.
Judge Easterbrook, our chief judge, would remind you that we all write for the court unless we happen to be writing a dissent, so it
right.
really doesn't matter.
In that later case, or the earlier case where Judge Bauer was writing, he said, we're not going to get dragged into that thicket, that is to determine the degree of conduct that would tip the scale. Later panels of this court, led by Judge Easterbrook back in 94, said, it doesn't matter. The lawyer's conduct is visited on the attorney. Here, the argument raised by the plaintiff has been waived, and they could have
visited
remedied their
the
own
situation.
I'm sorry?
You meant
the lawyer's
to say,
conduct is visited on the client. That's what you said.
Oh, I'm sorry. The lawyer's conduct is visited on the plaintiff.
On the client.
And
the defendant or whoever it might.
The argument that they've waived could have been preserved had the present attorney brought the Rule 59E motion, which this court approved, in Enrico, which is the very case they rely on in their reply, to say that we're wrong. I would respectfully ask this court to affirm. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Anything further, Mr. Schroeder?
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, a few comments. We did not argue below 60B6. The records show that, but specifically, the reply we submitted after we were allowed to come in, after Mr. Hinterlong had filed his motion to vacate, cited Rule 60B6, as counsel's pointed out. We think that's enough to let us get in the door. And to the extent there's a problem with whether we should have presented more evidence or not, or the court, you're being asked to review under abuse of discretion something the district court didn't even consider, the easy answer to that is remand to the district court and let the district court have a hearing and determine what exactly the facts are.
But that's not so easy, actually, because I mean, the language the district court uses in her order makes it quite clear that she thinks the only thing that's being put in front of her is 60B1, and we all agree that we're not talking about a 60B1 situation. And before we could remand, we would have to say to Judge Lefkoe, you abused your discretion when you didn't reach out and pull this argument up that was certainly not emphasized, I'll say, to be nice, before her. How can we tell her she's abused her discretion under these circumstances?
Well, look at it this way. I mean, by the time the motion to vacate came down the pike, it was pretty apparent that Mr. Hinterlong, as you yourself said, had done pretty much everything he could to mess up the case and amazingly prejudice Bakery Machinery.
Did somebody file an ARDC complaint against him?
That has been done.
Yeah, I would think.
That's not going to do Baker Machinery any good in this case, but it has been done.
Seems to protect future clients from him. This might be a good thing.
Correct, Your Honor. What could have happened, it didn't, is you know, somewhere along the line, maybe Mr. Hinterlong would not have done it, but perhaps Judge Lefkoe could have said, I'm ordering Baker Machinery to send a representative here in court. I don't no longer think, Mr. Hinterlong, that you are doing anything to keep your client informed of the case. That didn't happen. That could be a way this court could get around an abuse of discretion issue and remand the matter back to her. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.